Hi, thanks for joining us. I'm Lisa Rose, your host, and we're Mad About Writing. I'm having a conversation today with Carla K. Morton. She's a professional speaker, award-winning author, photographer, and the 2010 Texas Poet Laureate, and a member of the Texas Institute of Letters. Described as one of the more adventurous voices in American poetry, Carla has been featured on Good Morning Texas, NPR, PBS, ABC News, CBS News, and in countless newspapers, blogs, and magazines. Her latest poetry collection, Turbulence and Fluids, was released in April 2023 by our partner, Madville Publishing. Carla and I got talking about artificial intelligence. Let's jump in with the two of us talking about how it doesn't matter how successful you are, the insecurity of the creative writing ego is never spared.
See, I'm always a little intimidated too, because I came to poetry sideways, if you will, through journalism, right? So I'm not a PhD, and I don't have, you know, the knowledge of the classics and the classic teaching. So I'm always a little intimidated because I think, oh, they're going to throw out a word, and I'm like, well, I got to look that up.
And now you've become the one who intimidates people.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Well, you're so disarming. I'm sure they're not intimidated for long. They're still intimidated, but you make them feel safe.
Well, you're sweet. Thanks.
It's true. I was there. It happened to me in your orbit. It's like, oh, she's nice.
You're so funny. And by the way, thanks for working with me. I was at my mother's house this weekend and it was just a mess. So we're putting it on the market and cleaning it out and that kind of thing. So,
is your mother?
Oh, she's up here. She's got Lewy body dementia, which is, Lewy bodies. It's such a horrible thing. So dementia is bad enough. And then how the neurologist described it was, you know how there's a word for it, when you can look up at the clouds, say, and your mind makes shapes that you recognize, like, okay, there's a balloon, there's an elephant, right? There's a word for that. Well, if you have Lewy bodies, that's gone awry. So she looks at anything, any kind of clutter or anything, and she sees humans, but they all have grotesque faces. So it's a horrible nightmare. Recently read that Robin Williams had that, so that it kind of explains why that was the type of disease that he had. And it's like, oh, that's just so awful.
That is
so. She's up here next,
fascinating,
close to me.
And horrifying,
yeah. Right? To have, and it seems like it touches those brilliant minds, you know, those really brilliant people.
Yeah. Well, I could talk about that for a long time, actually. You know. And how fascinating it is, like when you talk to children and they put things together in unexpected ways that seem so brilliant. And then with someone like that, with that kind of dementia, it happens again.
Again. Right. So Christmas is fun and birthdays are fun. It's candles and balloons and, you know, Santa Claus. And
yeah.
Okay. She's a sweetie.
So what is really fascinating to you about poetry right now?
The way it survives, you know, in the beginning, it was an oral art, even before the alphabet was invented. And, you know, when the alphabet came along, they're like, oh, that's the death of poetry, because it won't be something memorized and spoken. And then it survived that. And then, of course, you know, in the digital age, here we are. And then someone just told me they had an app for some kind of AI. It says, make me up a poem about whatever. And it does it. And it's like, oh, and it's like, you poets are useless. And it's like, oh, I don't think so. Isn't that interesting?
Why don't you think so?
I think we can be mimicked. I mean, And I don't know, I am not a techie at all, but I understand how computers can learn and learn, maybe is the wrong word, gather enough information to where it advances, Is that learning? I guess so. But I still feel like there's the emotional element of being human that hopefully will always outweigh a computer, I hope. But that was just an interesting concept. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And they're like, no, we can just, they said a lot of school kids were doing that for assignments. And I was like, oh no.
Yeah. All my friends who were still teaching were all up in arms about that. And some of my writer friends too were feeling bleak about it. We were talking earlier about dementia and how they see things and then they say things like children do. And then again, later in life. One thing I didn't say when we were having that is that the adult listens and the adult hears more than is there, or here's a profundity that the speaker is not aware of. Mm. Might it be that the AI can do that and we won't be able to tell the difference?
Mm. Maybe.
Or it won't matter. Like tarot cards, you fill in.
Well, and that's actually a good point for you when you say it won't matter. If a poem still affects someone and touches them in the heart, that's what poetry should do. Does it matter that it was created artificially? It's sad for poets, but it's a very good pondering there. And people like all different kinds. It's, you know, there's so many different types of poetry and people have their loves. And I guess that ultimately, if it wouldn't matter if it was just automatically generated. If they like it, they like it. Roses are red, violets are blue.
Here's a worry is that this is demoralizing to poets. And if, for whatever reason, AI creates poetry that people respond to and it touches their hearts and they don't care who made it. That's the wave of existential dread that has swept over teachers and writers. It's already diminished their drive.
It's actually spurred mine. Yeah. Damn machines.
Yeah.
I want to write something better than a computer can come up with.
You want to find what it is that you can give that AI can never.
You know, it stems back from the fifth grade for me. I was always that really weird kid that went out in the back. We had 3 acres growing up and I'd take pencil and paper. And I knew if I could sit there long enough and just listen, that the wind would have something to tell me. There'd be some revelation, something. So I would just listen and listen. And I'm still listening. And, you know, and I remember in fifth grade, Mrs. Aaron was my teacher, and we had an assignment to go home and write about our favorite color, a poem, and bring it back. And I was so excited because this is what I did, you know. So I went home and I wrote it and I gave it to her and she read it right there and she said, wow, you know, just one word. But I thought, oh, I want that. I want to draw that emotion again and again and again for me. So I was really addicted from that moment on. I had one book, my Accidental Origami, my best of, that I dedicated to her, and I got to show it to her before. She was still alive.
Did you really?
So, yeah.
Oh.
But it's like, you know,
wow.
You can't underestimate the power of a response and the power of teachers, of course, and what they create in the minds of a student, that desire. And maybe that's what separates us ultimately from the computer.
The drive. That sparked, I don't, if we get neurological about, was it a dopamine or an endorphin or something when she said, wow, you had that moment of success.
Yes.
A reward. And you want it again. You said you were addicted.
Lorca named it. He called it the duende. Do you know, have you ever heard of duende?
I remember that word and nothing about it.
Well, some people use Duende like being a little mischievous fairy or something, but that's not what Lorca said. So, you know, when you're on stage, right? And or if you've ever gone to a concert or something, and some concerts are good, but some are just exquisite, right? Just there was this feeling, it was wonderful. Well, according to Lorca, the Duende is that entity. So you are the artist, and you are giving every ounce of everything you've got out there. And then it goes into the crowd. And sometimes, and I love it when I'm there and people give me their face. They give me their full face. And I'm giving it to them. And then it goes in their body and then it comes back out. So it's this duende, this energy, this artistic thing, and the arts touch one heart to another, and you can actually see it and feel it as it goes to them and in their heart and back to you. It's just the most amazing thing.
That's a live performance.
Yes. That's why Zoom just I just did a few. There's no heart in a Zoom. I mean, it's great. It's wonderful. It's necessary, but it cannot replace a live performance.
No,
that human interaction.
Oh, when they're all those little tiny faces. Oh, is that what you're talking about? When you give a reading of that, and it's just be, well, you can't read their faces.
No.
When you say they give you your faces, the face is only this big.
I know.
One thing if it's out there in a crowd and it's live.
Right.
But
yeah, that human interaction is what we need. And that's what poetry needs. It needs each other.
Because we're social creatures.
Yes, we are.
Of language, what Lauren Isley called dream animals. Which is the reality that we create with language and that we share.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, but it binds us. And when you said, does it matter if the poem was written by AI, maybe that's why it matters.
So to some people, yeah, to some people, it might not matter. You know, if it affects them and they like it, it's not going to matter. But oh, I hope it does matter.
No, it matters to people if a work of art that they loved turns out to have been created by someone who is morally compromised in some way. That it diminishes their love for the art. You know, think about Michael Jackson, Bill Cosby, you know, people who've been canceled and now they'll never love that art again.
You know, it's a little bit sad, but understandable. But I remember my mother when I was little, I don't know what band or singer. I love this music and I can't remember which one it was, but they were in the news and they had done something terrible. And I was conflicted, right? And I talked to my mom and she said, "Hey, love the music. You don't have to love the musician." And I thought,
she gave you permission.
Oh, yeah. You know, we're all flawed.
Yes.
Yeah, she did. We are all flawed. She didn't say that. And that's what I needed to hear. And it's like, okay.
You know, there's a serial killer and the neighbor says, but he was such a nice guy. He could be both.
Yeah. It could be both. There was some little movie about that, about a serial killer, a little series.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I couldn't tell you. My kids could tell you.
Maybe I'm too forgiving, but yeah, I think we're all.
Oh, I'm severely flawed. It's just, I can't judge another by that. But if they do something that I love, well, that's their contribution. You know, that's, what is, you know, wasn't it Picasso that said, the meaning of life is, you know, to find your desire. And then the purpose is to give that away. I might have misquoted, but
that's good enough
like
for
that.
Me. Yeah.
Something like that.
So what are you giving away? Yeah.
What am I giving
away? The sound in the wind? The message in the wind?
Well, you know, I think as poets, we have to see and feel the world and maybe translate it the only way we know how to make maybe what's things that aren't necessarily palpable and put them into some kind of reality that people can say, oh, yes, 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 that was it, whatever that is. And you know that it's that moment when after a poem is read and people go, you know, it's that stenegmos, that stenegmos is that holy sound that's just uttered, and it's actually a little prayer that, oh, you know, oh, mm-hmm. that just rises up. I hope that's...
I'm making a vocabulary list. I hope
that's what people feel.
No, I want to know more about... Yes, for you.
Not for me.
As you were saying that about they give you their face, which I would love to talk more about. And then, yes.
Oh, I love that.
I was thinking, what is it? You see the world and you feel the world. That's your job. And then you bring it together to create stenegmos for them in such a way that you have that effect on them. It's almost like a spell or an alchemy, that you take all of these materials that you've gathered,
yes,
and then you cast it in a certain way that it has that,
yes,
effect, a kind of magic. It's all unseen.
It's all magic. That's it. I love the word magic with poetry, because it is. It just comes in, and it. I had an interview once, and she said, "I love this poem. I really don't know why I love this poem." And I said, "Well, what is, after reading it, what does it make you think of?" She said, oh, it makes me think. And I said, that is what it's supposed to do. You know, this is the power of the arts, all the arts. It's okay. So in the grand, in the grand museum, there's Venus on the half shell, you know, there's the birth of Venus, right? And a million people a week or however many come through and see this work of art. And they all stand there, and they're all standing in the same place. They're viewing the exact same thing. And yet they take from that work of art whatever it is that their soul needs. Whatever that beauty translates to in them, they take from it what they need. And that was kind of I did that National Parks book.
I do.
Did you know about that? So, yeah. I couldn't believe in 100 years of the park that no poet has ever gone to all 62 national parks and written a book about it.
Yes.
And I had to do it. So I did it with Alan Berkelbach, you know, my fellow poet laureate. But here's two poets standing in the same place, taking in this beauty. And we each had a poem for each park. And the poems are so crazy different.
Wow.
Right? Because how it affected us, we took what we need from that moment. But that's how I hope that poetry is for everybody. They, you know, she liked that poem, and she couldn't really tell me why, but she's like, I read it over and over again because I like the way it makes me feel. And I went, yeah, that was such a great compliment. I said, that's the best compliment.
I was thinking, is it wisdom that people crave? Because you know, just for survival, we need to feel, but it's, we need to feel that we are stronger and smarter than we were a moment before. But we also need to feel like we belong, and that we have others who understand us and accept us, right?
Well said.
So that we're safe and that we'll thrive.
Yeah. And that we can understand each other in a way that, yeah, I mean, we're we are in this world by ourselves, brought into it. You know, we're certainly going to leave this world by ourselves, but it's like, okay, what in the meantime? We all see the same things. Basically, we all have different experiences, but it's like, okay, how does that translate to us? You know, and maybe the poet can have is another set of eyes that can just help that transition, if that makes
it any does. Sense. And it made me think for some reason about the flamingo in the Tampa International Airport. Have you seen this work of art?
You
would know. You would know if you'd seen it.
Okay.
It's a giant, I forget what floor it is, but when you walk in, light is coming from above and rippling on the floor. And there is a giant flamingo that's legs go up through the ceiling, and then its neck is coming down and it's feeding on the floor. So it's as if you're a little tiny krill. Is that what they are? Like you are a little shrimp.
Oh, I love that. I have not
and
seen this.
And the flamingo is you're underwater and the flamingo is feeding. But it's so whimsical and so gigantic and so very pink. And like, how useless is that? You know, a lot of us, we don't get paid well. You and I were talking about that a little bit ago. You know, don't make a living at this. Especially in this culture, what good are you? You know, and it's always a little mark of shame when somebody says, well, what do you do? Well, I'm a writer. And it's either cool or it's sad.
You live in your mother's basement. Right. Yeah. But the world needs us. The world needs this, whether they realize it or not. You know, we need pink flamingos. We need art and laughter. Oh, laughter and love are just this very fine line. And I think it's the amount of attention that we pay to the world. It's like, we're all here, but it's like, oh, did you see this? Okay, it was a tiny little worm coming down on a leaf, but oh my, you know, there's a whole cosmic poem in that one little action. And I think it's that attention that we pay to the world that makes us love the world, you know? Because you can read poems from 200 years ago and it's still current. It's still, the heart hasn't changed.
And you're connecting with that person even though they're no longer with us.
Right.
You're still, even though they're no longer here, they're with you, you're not alone.
Right.
When you're engaged in the poem, you're engaged with the poet, which is why it can't be a program.
Oh,
yeah. Or it loses something, even if it's...
But I would like to think that people would connect, that there's something about, I don't know, something about the words of someone who's actually feeling it that they'll connect more with. But who knows? Who knows? It will be interesting.
You are game. You're like, bring it.
I am game. Bring it.
You've got this. Well, this was really fun. And
it was fun. Thanks
yeah,
so
you were
much.
Really fun to talk to.
Well, thanks. So are you. I think you're a lot of fun. Well, we need to do this with some wine sometime, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have my water.
Okay, next time wine.
Okay. Oh, that's dangerous.
That's okay, too.
Poets and wine. I love it.
There you go. That's a podcast.
That's a podcast.
You can find Carla K. Morton's latest poetry collection, Turbulence and Fluids, at madvillepublishing.com and at your favorite independent bookstore. Special thanks and crazy love to our co-host and producer, Luann Smith, and our mad administrator and computer guru, Lane Rose. Again, I'm Lisa Rose, and we're Mad About Writing.